instinctive nature to bring the anguish to the English language with this ink.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your schooly D, not your spoony G, of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Yeah, that's why when I brainstorm, gotta write it out, write it out. Simon Cowell of rhyming foul. That's why you sound so shook. Why you bound? Notebook got tie around your throat. Hook it inside your mouth. Go. It's what it's like when the mic is out. Cause I'm tearing at your flesh with it. So your larynx and neck is slit. With these lyrics, weapons expert with. Like hair extensions, extra clips. And you're scared to effing death a bit. You're staring at a legend that. In a pair of Skechers sweatshirt rip. In hoodie black. Should be strapped to a chair, a stretcher, electric. Swear on every record. Itch. Fingers so high in the air, I bet your senses flip. Like a barometric pressure switch. Caring less who I've been with this. I met your neck like Pez dispense. Go ahead, spit your flows, itch.
I met your throat like Chloroceptic. And you got strep, I'm too complex with. This shit I wrote is awesome, next. I'm at your throat, I'm feeling reckless.
And I'll take 100 of you. 100 of you.
Yeah. It's that kind of week. That was a song by a young rapper named Eminem and a younger rapper named Fresher that is Chloroceptic off the new record by Eminem, which is called Revival. At the end of an incredibly traumatizing and exhausting 2017, here we are with a traumatizing and exhausting album. And discuss Eminem, there is no person I'd rather have in the room than Craig Jenkins. What's up, Craig?
What's up?
Craig is a music critic in New York Magazine, and crucially for this particular adventure, I feel, at least from watching your writing over the years and on Twitter, I feel like you, maybe more than others, have been willing to engage with M seriously, as opposed to kind of as a punchline in his later career. I feel like a lot of the Eminem criticism of the last, say, you know, of the 2010s has mostly just been, this guy, it's been a lot of that. And I feel like you've taken it seriously, even if you haven't always liked it. Is that fair to say?
It's boring to be like, this guy sucks.
Right.
Like, there's always something that's like worth saving in like a record, I feel like. And I'm one of those people who will like dig like 9 records into the Big Sean album and like find the one that's like worthwhile. So
yes. Yeah. That's the one with Cash.
I'm also a glutton for punishment, so.
Well, that's, again, that's a separate, that's the therapist episode of podcast. We're going to come back for that one. But Revival, I want to put you on the spot a little bit. Now, neither of us write for Pitchfork. You have written for Pitchfork. I have not. But if you were going to put a Pitchfork score on a Revival, where would you be at? Because you have put Pitchfork scores on previous Eminem records.
I would give it a cold 5.0, which is to say that I thought that it was a touch better than the last one, but still, like, catastrophically pretty bad in a lot of places.
Okay. So here's where I embarrass myself. I'm going to say 6.3.
That's good.
That's almost good.
That's 3 stars out of... My math is off.
It's 3 to 3.5.
3 and an 8. You're giving a Rolling Stone 3 stars.
I'm giving it a solid 3. How about a 3 and an 8?
You know, everything gets.
That's true. Well, having written Rolling Stone for many years, I know that that's like, there's no value to that grading scale.
It's like, this exists.
Yes, right.
Shouts out Rolling Stone. No disrespect.
But it's no, like a little bit of disrespect.
It's like, this exists.
A little bit of disrespect. And I say that as someone that caught a lot of checks off Rolling Stone over the years. Shouts to Nathan Brackett for keeping the kid laced in the late 2000s. But 3 stars, come on, it's a shrug. We all know what it is. I want to say, so I found myself increasingly sympathetic to Revival the more I listened to it, which is not a thing that I have felt towards Eminem at all in the last 10 years. I feel like Eminem has been making consistently subpar music, and even worse than that, subpar music that's insular and doesn't answer to anything but itself. And so, obviously, when the new record comes around, my first instinct is trepidation, like deep sigh. Did you have a similar vibe?
When I saw that it was like 19 songs and 78 minutes long before it came out, I was very stressed.
I literally just spit out my Coke.
Yeah, he literally did just spit a drink, I can attest.
Oh my God. Okay. So yes, when you said 19, I mean, you said 19 songs. I got to clean my iPhone off.
It was like 19 songs, 78 minutes. I'm like, this is a movie. Like, I could watch like a whole children's movie in a stretch of time if this album happens.
And not like this is a movie, like, yo, this is a movie.
Yeah, it's not tight. Like, it's not like, there's no act three to it. Like, there's no like redemption to the main character at all.
But before we talk about kind of some of the micro stuff of recent Eminem, let's talk about the rollout of this album, which happened in maybe typically unconventional fashion. So the first real thing that we see from Eminem in this album cycle is on the BET Hip Hop Awards. As you guys know, on all the BET Hip Hop Awards, the best parts are often the ciphers. And so one of the ciphers was, I guess, a shady, Shadyville cipher. And M rapped for about 6 minutes or whatever about how much he hates Donald Trump.
6 minutes?
Yeah. about how much he hated Donald Trump and how if you were a Donald Trump fan, that you can no longer be an Eminem fan, which I don't think is law. I don't think anybody signed that into law, and I'm pretty sure there's probably still a bunch of overlap. But it was probably the first and loudest political statement that you've really seen from Eminem of that nature. It certainly kind of dropped, I don't want to say with a thud, but there were a couple of issues with that freestyle, right? People weren't necessarily prepared for the ideology of it, but also...
Or the awfully hot coffee pot.
Yes, the flow was a little... Mm-mm. Now, what was your vibe when you first saw that?
The first thing I noticed is the ridiculousness of the hand gestures that he was making, which, I mean, you know, he comes from the battle rap scene, but it was absurd. And then I was like, wait, the bars on this are, like, smart, dumb. Like, they're clever, but they're not concerned with, like, the fact that people are listening to the next... This is a continuous thing happening. It's like line to line, like something is happening, but like it's not like a song. It's not like a freestyle. It's not a verse.
And there were a lot of – he used a lot of blank space. Shouts to
this
Taylor.
Is true. A lot of stuff.
So there was a lot of things where he's going to rap like this and then come back. And it seems
self-important. Like, it's, I have something to say, and you're going to absorb every word. I'm going to give you a half second to absorb the last thing that I said. And it was like,
Did you think that the flow pattern in cadence was pre-planned, or you think it was sort of spontaneous?
Oh, he wrote it beforehand.
No, obviously it's written, but I'm saying do you think that he said...
The dramatism of
it. Yeah, the pause 4 seconds here, the sit for 20 seconds here. Did he do that? Or do you think that was spur of the moment?
I really think that was planned. Like, it's a big statement, and he was trying to, like, you know, come back in a major way and be like, "Yo, I have opinions on the matters of the year," and it just people immediately left, and it was.
Let's listen to a little bit of that. We'll play a part that has a lot of pauses in it, in case anybody wants to take a break.
That's an awfully hot coffee pot. Should I drop it on Donald Trump? Probably not. But that's all I got till I come up with a solid. Got a plan and now I got a hatchet like a damn Apache with a tomahawk. I'ma walk inside a mosque on Ramadan and say a prayer that every time talks, she gets a I'ma stop. But we better give Obama props, cause what we got in office now's a kamikaze that'll probably cause a nuclear holocaust. And while the drama pops and he waits for to quiet down, he'll just gas his plane up and fly around till the bombing stops.
Okay. So as you said, there are some bars in this. It's not bar free. It's not bar free.
I can't remember it.
I can't really remember him, but I remember watching it a few times. I remember seeing how much flack it was taking right off the rip and then going back to it and being like, there's some stuff in here. I don't enjoy this presentation, this kind of like big picture presentation, but there are some micro moments that I thought were like, okay, Eminem moments.
Well, you know what? It's not the first time that Eminem popped up on the BET Awards, you know. Cypher, and he's done some genius ones in the past. Like, I think there was one where it was him, Mos Def, and Black Thought. I watched that annually, like, but this wasn't it.
Is that better than the Jewels, Jada, Fab one? Though? I don't know.
You know what the one I did like is the actual, like, Shady Records one, because they actually are known, if nothing else, for bars. And so it's like, here are six genius rappers right. in a row. Like,
Shouts to Slaughterhouse.
Is that still a thing?
No, I'm just, this is the Heritage Podcast.
Oh, yes.
I feel like I also wanted to say.
Shouts out Crooked Eye for floating the idea that there's a second half of that album. My God, can you imagine?
I feel like this episode of the podcast, we could also call this the Slandercast. We could also call this the Clapcast. Because I feel like there's going to be some clapping back going on.
What's up, Stans?
Yes, we're here.
I was one of y'all once. I'm reformed.
Okay. But I think part of the reason that you can approach M with empathy is because I think you did come from that perspective. And I think that you embrace what's going on.
I would have told you he was top five in 1999.
There you go.
Maybe even 2001.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time writing about M and caring about M early in my career. You know, I wrote the Fader cover on Eminem in like issue number 3 or 4, whatever that is. Hung out in a hotel room in a Soho Grand. That was, we had a good time. But times have changed. So after this BET freestyle, which didn't go over super well, even though it was probably the most attention Eminem has gotten in quite a while. Then there were the teasing hints about the fact that Revival was coming. And then comes what was, I guess, technically the first single, which is Walk on Water. Let's all take a deep breath and listen to a little bit of Walk on Water with Auntie Yonce.
I walk on water, but I know Jesus.
Why are expectations so high? Is it the bar I set, my arms I stretch, but I can't reach? A far cry from it, or it's in my grasp, but as soon as I grab squeeze, I lose my grip like the flying trapeze. Into the dark I plummet, now the sky's blackening. I know the mark's high, but flies rip apart my stomach, knowing that no matter what bars I come with, you're gonna heart gripe, and that's a hard fight getting to swallow. So I scrap these as pressure increases like khakis. I feel the ice cracking because
I walk on water, but I know Jesus. I walk on water, but only when it freezes.
All right, so I struggled with this one. I think a lot of people struggle with this one. Eminem spends a lot of this song basically admitting to fallibility. I may not be as good as people believe I am. I may not be able to write a rhyme that's better than the ones I've written before. I too agonize about making a better podcast than the one I've made previously. So of course I relate to this kind of content. But the heavy-handedness of the chorus, M has a way of leaning on female vocalists for emotion when he himself is not particularly effective.
Yeah, I think it's Skylar Grey writing all of them, and I think that she's a liability low-key, but that's another story.
Hot low-key? High-key!
I walk on water, but I ain't no Jesus. Like, what? And then she's like, oh, but only when it freezes. Like, get it? Like,
get it?
Get it? Get it, the album. Like,
yes. Well, I know. It's so funny that we both ended up using a version of the get it joke in our reviews because I kept listening to this record. And as I was taking notes on lyrics, I kept typing to myself, get it? And like by the end of my note taking, I had that like 12 times. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm just going to put this in my review.
You know, I didn't always get him. Like the one where he's like, oh, what is he going? He's like, oh, yeah, I want to put this apple in cider. And I was like, why is your penis a computer? And then I was like, oh, apple cider, get it. And
get
so, like,
it. Yeah.
Infuriating.
I also just want to say that, like, I respect people who crease their khakis, but I don't think it's necessary. I just want to say that.
Oh,
just,
I don't.
So what was your takeaway from Walk on Water?
I liked it.
And really?
Actually, I messed with it more than most people did.
Did you write about that? I don't know if I caught that.
Not really. But I heard it and I was like, wow, this guy's sounding like an adult. And, he does that. He comes out with the lead single where it's like, this guy's growing up. And then the rest of the album just like gutter, bucket, sludge type.
Driving
like
a Budweiser, pick up a slut and butt to butt.
Lord, like the sex raps.
Oh, geez.
The theory that there are very few existing good sex raps by any rapper whatsoever.
Like ever in life?
Yeah, no, just literally, yeah. Like maybe like Wu-Tang, Ice Cream, like
Father MC.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, it's like Father MC, Big Daddy Kane, everything else after that.
And everybody was like, yeah, guess what I'm going to do with my, and your, and that. And I'm like, nah, like.
Just that's get not in the hot. Car.
It's like, does, I don't want to hear about it. Like, so.
I definitely don't want to hear about it from Adam.
And so, yeah, your booty is heavy duty, like diarrhea, like, ooh. Get out of here. Like, no, that's the worst thing ever. Like, everything, it's like, are you talking about, like a car, or are you talking about a person? Like, you know,
have you ever been to like an actual sort of like rap battle, not like a street corner rap battle, but like an actual sort of like organized rap battle?
No, I've only watched them like through footage and videos and things.
I feel like I remember going to Scribble Jam, and I went to Scribble Jam, and I feel like
throwback.
Yeah, so the lyric that you just dropped, I feel like if someone said that on stage at Scribble Jam, like, everybody being like, oh! Like, people be, like, losing their minds, like, throwing their hats on the ground and, like, running around and, like, punching walls and stuff.
Do you think that he's getting back to his roots the way he raps right now? Like,
no. Because I also feel like the thing that Eminem was really good at.
Battle rappers have trouble writing songs.
But he didn't in 99 and 2000 and 2001. But I think this is a Dr. Dre thing. So Dr. Dre, brought a tremendous amount of structure to M. What M needed when he was coming out of that scene into the pop world was he needed structure. Dre had that in spades. So it was a perfect combination. But as Dre has pulled back from the sort of day-to-day handholding of like what an Eminem record sounds like, which to be fair is, I imagine, a complicated and unrewarding task. But as he's pulled back, I feel like Eminem has relied on kind of like the worst instincts of like 1970s white rock, that kind of like uncomfortable gender dynamic of like, I have a woman, she's not that effective, she sings and she feels, and I get to spaz out. These kind of retrograde frameworks that no one's saving him from. Whereas I think Dr. Dre was kind of like, I can give you something, and then M wrote to
something. Yeah, well, like, what do you tell that guy about how to rap? Like, this is a bad verse, Eminem, like, and he's like, I'm Eminem.
I
like,
don't know, man. Are you accustomed to liking, like, hot 36s and hot 27s and hot 53s? I mean, I didn't do a bar counter on some of these verses, but I did, like, a walk around the block counter with some of them, and I took a long-ass walk to some of these verses.
I feel like he can be saved, like, the instincts are off. He's indulging his worst tastes, but he needs like a taskmaster kind of dude, like Pharrell, to be like, here's the shape of the song. You just throw your verses in.
Exactly.
Kind of, and like,
it reminds me.
And also a quality control person to be like, don't say your booty is heavy duty like that.
Yes. Or don't say, be like, what is it kicking? What was the fairies line? Like, I should write children's, but I kick so much fairy. Kick so many fairy tales.
I was like, oh God. Like,
come on, man. Literally like no person was like, don't do this. Not a single person was like, don't do this.
Honestly, like, as homophobic rap lyrics go, like, come on, like, that's lazy.
That's not even good. Right? But like, also, just like, seriously.
Like, make me mad that it's like, it's a tight line and it's annoying because it ruins the song for me. Don't be like, fairy tales, yeah.
Yeah. So, Revival as a whole, you don't think is much better than the recent Marshall Mathers
album? I think it's a hair better, although I really didn't, for lack of interest, like, go back to the last album all that much.
No, nor did I. No, I found it. Well, okay, I'm lying. I tried a little bit, but I found it so onerous to get through that,
you know,
I just let it go.
Not for nothing, like, Berserk sounds like genius compared to like most of the stuff. You know, actually, the biggest disappointment of Revival is that there are rap fans now who think that Rick Rubin is a producer. That's the most insulting aspect of, like, Eminem, like, even working right now. Is it like, there are people who are like, man, Rick Rubin sucks. He just chops up rock songs. And I'm like,
what is your vibe on the two? On, are there three Rick Rubin beats on this record?
It's like two or three.
Or it's like two and like a
couple. He did the Joan Jett one.
Yes.
That's insulting. It's, yeah, I don't know. I don't, like, who is in charge? Like,
if you go to Rick Rubin's house, he only has six records. Billy Squire, Joan Jett, right? It's all he has. He just picks one and just chops it up. It's very, it's an efficient process.
Did he do the Bette Midler?
No, he didn't. I don't think he did.
The fact that like Bette Midler is sampled.
Also, the sort of the coterie of producers on this record is like extremely 1999. You know, like Scram Jones is on this record.
Scram Jones, Just Blaze, the Just Blaze beat. Fred
Rec,
like,
Fred Rec is on this record. Emile from like before Emile was making Lana Del Rey records. Emile is on this record with the old Emile. The old meal can come to the phone right now. So it's a very particular like approach to the type of sound that Eminem was looking for. Here's why I found myself sympathetic to it. On a bar for bar basis, I don't think I enjoy Eminem anymore. Like, I think that's just been washed out of my system. I was at least a little bit kind of compelled by his commitment to form. And I also felt like the beat selection, he has an ear for bad beats that he sounds okay on. I don't like the beat. Like, if you just played me the beat separately, I don't know that I would enjoy the beat. But I feel like he picks the right bad beats for him.
There's like a handful of like throwback rappity rap joints on there.
Yes.
That Framed one. Like.
Yeah, let's listen to Framed. Because Framed is
the good song.
And also, it's a good song, and it's a good Eminem song. It's a good OG Eminem song. Let's listen to Framed.
Feeling kinky with thinking in two shorts, freaky tails. Hey. Having creepy visions of whiskey drinking, envisioning sneaking into where Christie Brinkley dwells. I know this is risky thinking, but I wanna stick her like she's decals. But when I'm murdering females, better pay attention to these details, or you could be derailed. Better wear at least three layers of clothing or be in jail. If you get scratched because you're DNA, be all up under her fingernails.
Man, he hears you, I don't think he cares. He gives a fuck, even his pinky swears. Three personalities, person out of me, please beware. Her TV blares, can't hear the creaking stairs. She's unaware in no underwear, she's completely bare. Turns around and screams, I remember distinctly. I said I'm here to do sink repairs. I chop her up, put up Audi parts in front of Stephen Avery's trailer and leave them there.
But hey man, I was framed. I know what this looks like, officers. Please just give me 1 minute, I think I can.
But when murder rent beat males.
Yeah, right. So, okay, so what do we learn? What do we learn from Framed? We learn that Eminem watches Netflix. He's making Steve, dropping Steve Avery jokes. So he watches Netflix. I think that he is still, like, I thought the sex raps on this record were bad, but the kind of, like, murder fantasias were probably the best one.
Maybe that's always been the story with him, too. Like, my favorite stuff by him apparently is, like, the really, like, I'm killing people in a glorious fashion and stuff. Like, the real, like, Clockwork Orange type stuff.
Okay, let's pull back a little bit. A young rapper who's Eminem-esque drops a song like Framed, Cold, on SoundCloud in 2017. What happens?
I have to listen to how dope the bars were for infinity years on Twitter.
But here's the thing. Do you think that in the social and political climate of the now, a person like Eminem can get traction?
Absolutely not. There's, I mean,
you think it would just be shouted down right off the rip?
I think that people wouldn't really care for it. Kendrick is out right now. Like, there's a whole like mandate for, you know, applying your lyrics to like a social consciousness and really saying mm-hmm. stuff about what's going on right now. That just like a guy like Logic can sell like hundreds of thousands of records. There would be no Eminem if he came out right now. That's unfortunate. But
But what about Tekashi? What about X? What about an actual sort of coming from that world? Because I felt the same. Like, my first answer to the question.
I mean, they're sloppy is what they are, like.
No, of course. I don't mean musically. No, they're sloppy. But, like, my first answer to the question that I just asked was the same one that yours was. But then my second thought was, like, actually, there is this scene that's existing right now that is condoning and, if anything, boosting this kind of behavior.
Is that backlash? Is that, like, when, like, Eminem came out of the whole boy band thing? Like, I wonder. Is shit too clean right now, and that's why, like, all these dirtbags are getting on?
But I do think, like, you know, if you think about Lil Pump being like, J. Cole. And it's like, I'm sure Lil Pump doesn't listen to J. Cole, but he intellectually understands that there is a movement, Kendrick, J. Cole, Logic, etc., that he stands in opposition to. He knows, and he knows that it furthers his brand and vision to be in opposition to that. And I wonder if an Eminem or an Eminem-like figure could come from that space in 2017.
I don't know if it's because there is a sort of, like, split in the culture that the music is doing that right now, or if it's reverse engineered. Like, is it that there are dirtbag rappers coming up in response to all the clean stuff, or is it that people are informing that? I don't know.
Do you like the dirtbag stuff? The Eminem. No, the Eminem dirtbag
stuff. Oh, but back when, I was like 18, 17.
Also. As was he. Well, no, he was 20. 23 or 24, but like, you know, they were kids. We were all kids. I don't know.
That's my excuse.
Do you think that, do you think in any way Eminem's success at his time was in any way connected to the social and political moment of that era?
Extremely.
Talk about that.
I mean, yeah. So the things got really squeaky clean sort of toward the end of the 90s. And yep. I really feel like as a one time and still sporadically every now and then very angry person, I was keyed into the stuff that was like, you know what? Like, this is stupid. This is too clean. Like, let's get dirty, let's act up, like, sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I end up listening to a bunch of new metal.
Right.
And, like, just, like, angry-ass rappers and stuff. And, like, it's weird to see that happening again because I don't think that the culture is very clean.
No. The culture, well, I don't think the culture of 2017 is very clean.
Although, I mean,
maybe, maybe 2015 and 2016.
Maybe there are people who feel like wokeness as a mandate is like suffocating and are like reacting by listening to the creepiest person that they possibly could. But that stuff is not technically tight. It's like if somebody came out of that scene and was like tight as a rapper or like as a producer or whatever, really had it, like I would maybe consider it. But like the best you're sending me is like XXXTentacion, who like makes tapes that sound like literally they're not finished yet.
Right.
And just like EQ'd to like blow your eardrums open.
Right, but also think of the difference in these 16 years, right? I mean, barriers to entry are very, very different. Ease of access to a younger audience, the way that you can get a 14-year-old's ears in 2017 is very, very different than what it required to get a 14-year-old's ears in 2000 or 1999. So I don't want to say the bar is uploading a track.
Yeah, you had to back in the day you had to go on TV shows and
right. And like Eminem could have been destined to languish in obscurity. Like, you know, he could have been a great rapper who no one ever heard.
He'd probably be making tight music if he never blew up.
No, I actually don't believe that.
I think that he makes a lot of pop stuff to float the records, and that's some of the worst stuff that he does.
Well, which pop stuff, though? You mean the current pop stuff? The kind of, like, Rihanna duet type stuff?
Even, like, I would have given this argument in, like, 2002. I thought that he was really cutting into, like, a sort of middle-of-the-road direction with his stuff. And it was because people were paying attention, and it's like, all right, I have to float the hook, and I have to have the hit.
But I feel like the minute he embraced guitar was the minute everything went wrong. I think when he was still in kind of, like, whimsy land, I thought he was well-suited to that. But the minute that he tried to like play himself in like in basically like AOR purgatory, that was you know, that stuff was DOA. Maybe it's a Detroit thing. Maybe he listened to a lot of Bob Seger growing up. Like, I don't know. Or maybe he hung out with Kid Rock too much in the early days. But I always thought that was the thing. And also it was also the moment, frankly, when Dr. Dre pulls back. Like when Dre pulls back and M starts embracing white music of the 70s.
Yeah, like
things go wrong.
Like really, like I think Lose Yourself is like the deal breaker, like low key. And it's a decent song, but like really once he figures out that he's gotta have the anthemic, like, you know, rock sounding hook and the loud, you know, and then next thing you know, he's like, I mean, a lot of rappers have poor taste in rock though. Like
that's always been the case. Jay-Z. Always been the case. Always been the case.
Even Kanye has his questionable moments, although he did do that freestyle over Young Folks that low-key, we forget that Drake jacked the idea from him.
Okay, so sort of to this point a little bit, and some of the points we were talking about earlier as far as M's relationship to female vocals, there is a song on Revival that is deeply egregious. So egregious that I actually think if it had come out 10 to 12 years ago, it would have been a top 10 hit, because it's so egregious. And that is In Your Head, which features a sample from the Cranberries.
I'm packing up my smush in the cars I can fit. And I'm driving as far as I can get away from these problems. To all of my sorrows I forget. What's tomorrow like? It's tonight, I'm starting life again. Get to the corner and stop. Up your mind going beside psycho. When I fantasize, starting my whole life over. Yeah, right. Oh, and I might go and get hypnotized so I don't even recognize no one. I try to look alive, but there's nothing like holding your head up high when you're dead inside. And I just died sewing. In case you're wondering why am I inside showing, cause I done spilled all my guts and those are mine. So I'm picking them up and stuffing them back. I'll bet I've done enough in this rap. Recovery brought me nothing but that. Right where I was, and perhaps this could have been my victory lap if I wasn't on the verge of relapse.
In your head, zombie, zombie, zombie.
Yep.
That's the Scram Jones beat. What is
wrong? Yes, that's the Scram Jones.
So this album is infuriating. Like, I almost wrote it in the review, and I really was trying to be careful, but I was like, how do you get bad beats from Scram Jones? I was a kid. How do you get a bad Just Blaze beat like that?
Wait, first of all, Alex the Kid kind of makes only bad beats.
But I mean, like,
is your hot take that Alex the Kid is good?
That he can work in the right circumstances. But I mean, like, it takes like a sort of like special.
Are you an Imagine Dragons stan?
No.
Did you come to the podcast to confess to your love of Imagine Dragons?
I do not like them, although I think that I started liking them. I put a song on theirs on a playlist that I made for an article that I wrote recently, and then every time I enjoy it. I need to change that. I need to work on that.
I do find myself occasionally when I'm driving around in a rental car in a city that's like in the Midwest or the West, accidentally liking Imagine Dragon songs.
Yeah, because you'd be like, who is this?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You're like, oh, this kind of knocks.
You're like, this hits. And then like you look up who it was and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, you know, the minute I whip out the Shazam on it, I'm like, ah, God, no, not this. So anyway, there's a song with a Cranberry sample on an Eminem record in 2017.
I don't know if I went back to the Cranberries record because of the Eminem record, or if it just incidentally something had hit into my inbox that like had like the deluxe edition or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's disrespectful. Like, it's bad, first of all.
Yeah, but I'm of the mind that it's so bad. It's I don't think it's so bad it's good, but I think it's so bad it's effective.
It's just the chorus is too, like, that song is too specific to its time and circumstances to really be like, mm-hmm. I'm flipping this into something else. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I came up in an era where, like, that song was everywhere and everyone just,
of course.
Like, played it out that, like, when I hear it back, I'm like, this is a stupid choice. And that there's someone who's listening to it with fresh ears being like, well, that's interesting. You know, I like the chords to that, but.
But you also, like, but you know how this went. Like, you know, I don't want to speak like I know, but I know what happened is M was like, can someone flip the Cranberry? Like, call Scram Jones.
I really feel like he commissioned those flips.
Yes, he texted Scram Jones. He still has Scram Jones. Scram Jones definitely has not changed his phone number since the late 90s.
That's tight. Texas, by the Scram way, like, when he was on those Busta records, Lord.
Texted him and was like, I need someone to flip the Cranberries, that sad Cranberry song. And then like 64 minutes later, Scram Jones like emailed him an MP3.
Hit boys on this, like, what was y'all doing?
Okay. Speaking of additional sus female vocals on this record, let's listen to Like Home featuring Alicia Keys.
Someone get this area in a sheet. Time to bury him, so tell him to prepare to get impeached. Everybody on your feet. This is where terrorism and heroism meet. Square off in the street. This chump barely even sleeps. All he does is watch Fox News like a parrot and repeats. While he looks like a canary with a beak. Why you think he banned transgenders from the military with a tweet? He's trying to divide us. This like a cult, but like Johnny, he'll only unite us. Cause nothing inside us drives us like this fight does. Similar to when two cars collide. Cause our spirits crush and this spot's a tight one. But here the jaws of life come to pull us from the wreckage. That's what we get pride from when we can't from our stars and strikes. This type of pickle that we're in's hard to deal. But there's always tomorrow still if we start from scratch like a scab get the scars to heal and band together for Charlottesville and for Heather. Fallen heroes fill his wall with murals. Nevada, get up, hit the damn resetter. Let's start from zero. This is our renewal. Spray tan, get rid of, get a brand new better America. And here's to where it all
began. There's no place like home.
Didn't want to piss your base off, did you? Can't denounce the Klan because they play golf with you. You stay on Twitter, way to get your hate off.
I think that I would like that song if...
What? I can't even imagine.
If it was a diplomat song with no hook.
Oh, man.
Like, isn't that like a, like, you know, like... Oh. How back in like the classic Dipset era, they would just flip any old thing. Like,
yeah, of course.
Like, I would listen to like Cam over that and like with a Jimmy verse, and like that would be fire.
Okay,
this is
the kindest thing that could possibly be said about this about this unpleasant song. So, just for in case it wasn't clear from the clip, Like Home is an anti-Trump song, and Eminem is really doubling down on his anti-Trump lyricism. iconography, etc., etc. And, you know, he's out here comparing Trump to Hitler and the golfing with the Ku Klux Klan. You know, he's really, you know, it's very like follows DeRay once kind of kind of approach to political rap. You know, definitely read a few Wikipedia pages. How hard was it for you to get through this song?
Well, extremely. Yeah. Because it's anti-Trump, but it's like severely pro-America. And like, I think that he calls Alicia Keys in because he like heard, you know, the Jay-Z song.
Yeah, of course.
She's like, ah, yes, she can be very anthemic and pro whatever, mm-hmm. you know.
Did you say in your review, I'm pretty sure it was you, that basically you think that she's there sort of as kind of like an insurance policy against. Yeah, yeah, okay.
You can
so explain that a little bit.
Well, that he's going against the president a bunch, and I feel like there are people who will equate being anti-president with being anti-American, and so I feel like he was making an extreme point to be like, well, no, actually, this is a great place. It's just this one guy is ruining it, which is ultimately a stupid sort of sentiment.
Right. And also, I mean, like, can we talk about M's relationship to politics historically?
Yes. I was listening back to the Marshall Mathers, to Slim Shady LP, and yeah. He was getting at Hillary Clinton and, you know, Bill.
So here's the thing. Is M actually anti-Trump, or is he just perpetually in search of an antagonist?
M is historically anti-authority.
Yes.
Well, of course that rhymes.
Can you do it in M voice, though?
Historically anti-authority.
Historically anti-authority.
But no, so like, I mean, it is, he's had words for every sitting president but Obama. And so it's really hard to like
take it seriously.
Take that seriously because it's like, well, I mean, also there's the fact that they were acquaintances at some point. And,
right. You
know, Trump declared himself a fan in a book. He was like, yes, I love Eminem. Introduced the guy in an award show and gave him a political endorsement. This is like 4 years ago. Like, I think,
was it that recently? I thought it was a longer time ago.
Wait,
but it,
you know, I looked
years
really
ago.
Hard. It was either 4 or 14. People couldn't decide whether it was 20, like 2004 or 2014. And I wasn't going to go back and
yeah,
look
sure.
at the performance because
do your Googles.
I did so many Googles.
Do
no
your
one
Googles.
Could decide.
So I wonder a lot about. I don't want to say I do believe there is a seriousness to the anti-Trump. Content both in the BET Hip Hop Awards freestyle and also on this record.
Don't forget the campaign speech, 7 minute song about Trump that no one even registered exists after like a day that it came out.
Totally good point. But then there's also the line on this record where he talks about grabbing them in the what and saying that's what me and Donald agree on. And I'm like, you can't actually have it both ways. You can't actually be like, I'm going to be so sort of aggressively and overtly anti-Trump, but also, wah, 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 wah. You can't do that.
Well,
not in 2017, at least.
You zeroed in on the central stupidity of the record, which is that it tries to be anti-everything that guy stands for, but they have stood for some of
the same things.
And so that record specifically where he's like, we agree on it. That's why they call it a snatch. And I'm like, you're crossing yourself up every other record. It doesn't
exactly
make
right.
sense. Like, but I mean, that's what he does. He tries to grow and he tries to be serious. And then he indulges his absolute worst instincts right back to back. And never grows as a result. And so, you know, like look at Recovery, which was supposed to be the 12 step album and the serious record. And there's like about 5 serious joints. And he's like, you know what? It's back to the nonsense. And so we're going to rap about the childish stuff again.
But I noticed, so something that you said, I think, at the end of your review is that you feel that M has this instinct or need to satisfy a bunch of different kind of demographics or a bunch of different ideas about himself. And I think when I think about what I would like to hear from Eminem right now, I feel like I would like to hear either classic Eminem, like actual sort of like the, frankly, the grotesquery stuff, or as much of a fail as the kind of Rick Rubin situations are on this record, I think if M were to do a record that was basically like a 1986 rap record, I think it'd be good.
I think that the stuff on the Marshall Mathers LP2 where he tried that was some of the best stuff on it.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, you can just, but at the same time, like I also have a secret fantasy that A&R is somebody rapping over 80s beats. Holla at me.
Yes. Get at Craig SJ.
It's a good idea. Like,
it's a great
take
idea.
Take it back to the essence and just like have it be flows or vocals or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And he just like commits to like the seed of an idea. And it just like is like, all right, well, everyone needs cheese on the burgers. So we have to put the hits on it. Mm-hmm. And we have to have the singles. And we have to have the singers. And
right. And I don't think, especially for Eminem, who at this point is not going to get any radio play at all. He is completely not in need. He can basically make a lemonade, which is, of course, a heretical thing to say. But he can make a record that's completely answering only Eminem's to itself. On its own terms, it doesn't not preoccupy with radio, any of that other stuff. He could do his own thing.
But Lemonade had joints.
No, I know.
It was like by force.
But I'm saying part of the reason that Lemonade had joints is because it wasn't preoccupied with making hits.
But I think that an Eminem gets onto the radio by being Eminem. Essentially, it's like, here's a new
thing. Yes, but there's not going to be a single song on this record that ends up on the radio.
I'm scrolling the track list.
Are you? I mean, name one. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So if you and your management and your label know that that's not going to happen, then why not just go off and pursue something that's like a little bit more of an artistic pursuit?
But you know what? At the same time, like, never mind the radio. Let's see what made it to Rap Caviar.
Tuma, get at us. Let us know. To circle back to the Trump situation for a minute, what did you make of Untouchable on this record?
You know what? I instinctively, knee-jerk, hated it when it came out. I thought it was stupid and extreme. And then I heard the rest of the record, and I went back to it, and I was like, whoa, this is pretty tame, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So let's listen to Untouchable. Let's listen to one of the early sections of Untouchable, which is rap from the point of view of a bigoted white police officer.
Black boy, we ain't gonna lie to you. Black boy, we don't like the sight of you. Pull up on the side of you. Window roll down, profile. Then we wonder why we see this side of you. Coming from the dope house, we can let you slide, but your tail light is blue. Out, we know you're hiding that Heidi Klum on you. Another drug charge, homie, it's back inside for you. And just in case the chase might is, so we got the trident to put through right at you. We'd be delighted to unload it in your back and walk up and lay that taser on the side of you. Up, yeah, what the fuck am I to do? I keep telling myself, keep doing like you're doing. No matter how many lives you ruin, it's for the red, white, and blue. Time to go find a new one and split his head right in two. No one's ever indicted you. Why? Because you're a white boy, you're a
rock star. So when I think about Eminem's relationship to whiteness, especially in the early part of his career, I think in the very first phase, how effective his whiteness was at making him part of the pop culture conversation. Then, within like 2 or 3 years, he's making songs like White America or America, I forget which one it's called, where he's basically stating very openly that he understands how much he has changed the discourse of race within hip-hop and of hip-hop within America and understanding his place in that. But I never really felt that Eminem was a person to kind of unpack white privilege in any actual way. There's not a lot of mean. He understood it in terms of his own fame and his success, but I don't think he ever sort of did structural stuff, you know, causes, endemic things, etc. This record is maybe the first time that I hear Eminem thinking about that stuff. And you hear it on some of the Trump stuff, but you hear it on Untouchable.
You know what, though? It's more general than personal. And really, yeah. If you have flown to the forefront of, you know, hip hop and were being called, like, you know, a successor to Bob Dylan and things by people in 2001 and 2000, maybe unpack your specific journey in it and how that has helped you. And so that's why, like, really I thought that the sentiment on that song is nice. Yeah, like, maybe we should consider neighborhood policing and things. But it's sort of just disingenuous to, like, speak of that as something other than, you know, what is making him and making and keeping him famous. You know, it's like he's talking about the stuff and he's thinking about it, but it's like he's flying overhead and watching it instead of someone who's an active participant.
Yes, although I think part of that is because I sense this instinct on his part. And Eminem is not ever a person who I've ever thought was careful in any way. I never thought of him as careful. But for the first time, I felt like I hear him trying to distance himself from some of the broader kind of, you know, it's not a hashtag not all white people. Like, he's trying
the album. Oh, yeah, my gosh.
But that's, I feel like for the first time, I feel him trying to do that, or at least trying to engage in the conversation about that. And I agree, if he would talk even in more detail about his own story, that would be mind-opening. But I also think for him to engage in this kind of conversation, to look at white Eminem supporters and say, I don't support you if you support Donald Trump, that to me is something that he wouldn't have been, I would say, even emotionally or intellectually capable of 5 years ago.
I mean, I respect it conceptually, but, you know, it's like, you're the arch edgelord. You are the prototype edgelord. Like, so really to think that you're going to offend people when your whole thing was don't be offended, and to walk into this, you know, sort of this anti-PC culture sentiment is like a ridiculous idea. You're not going to anger them. They're still buying the record. It's going like 350,000 sold in the first week. What is the effect of that? Ain't no black folk buying that. Like,
right.
So like really, what was the effect? Like, I don't know. I would have like, if he wanted to do the real thing, like Macklemore did the real thing, which is to make your album so incisively about the social stuff.
Yes.
And tied the campaign so into it that you torpedo your whole career. I respected that move.
You're like, shouts to Macklemore for torpedoing everything.
Jumped on a bomb for the culture.
Yes.
I respected that. Also, 9-minute song about white privilege. Where it's all just nasal.
Right.
Nasal gazing.
A 9-minute song about white privilege, followed by a refusal to submit his album for the rap album Grammy.
Followed by a song where he calls up like Melly Mel and stuff. And it's like, let's get Melly Mel a check. Like,
followed by a coming tour with Kesha, which is just basically the ultimate like shrug emoji. Like, just like, we're out. Like, we're out the game.
No, so first of all, like, I really hope that they put Kesha first because.
You mean like she opens?
So I can leave, yeah.
You could show up late.
No, hell no. Like, you that's hard to gauge.
I wanna be honest and say that I have not historically enjoyed the music of Macklemore, but I did find the Macklemore and Ryan Lewis tour at peak Macklemore and Ryan Lewis to be like an enjoyable live experience.
Well, because
it was like going to church. It was like a church.
Well, that's Ryan Lewis's group, first of all. Like, he makes engaging stuff, and you can listen to Macklemore like the pitter patter over these fire beats.
You a big Wands fan? Okay, let's at the end of this record, there are three songs that are family or backstory specific. There's In Your Head, Castle, and A Rose, and they all kind of take different angles. So let's listen to a little bit of A Rose.
If I could rewind time like a tape inside a boombox, one day for every pill or Percocet that I ate. Cut down on the volume, I'd have heard everything, but death is turning so definite. Wait, they got me all hooked up to some machine. I love you, Bean. Didn't want you to know I was struggling. Feels like I'm underwater, submerged like a submarine. Just heard that nurse say my liver and kidneys aren't functioning. Been flirtatious with death, skirt chasing, I guess it's a Reba Dirt J. Same nurse just heard say they're unplugging me, and it's your birthday. Jade, I'm missing your birthday. Baby girl, I'm sorry, I fucking hate when you hurt, hey. And sweeties, thank you for waiting to open gifts. But girls, you can just open them. Dad ain't making it home for Christmas. Wish I had the strength to just blow a kiss. I go to make a fist, but I can't make when I'm frozen stiff. I yell, but nothing comes out. I'm crying inside, I shout. My vocal cords won't permit me. I scream, but it's not allowed. You put your arm around mama to calm her. Wow, I just thought about the aisle. I'll never get to walk this down. Never see you graduating your caps and gowns. It's about to be 2008. How's this happening now? I got so much more to do. In proof, I'm truly sorry if I let you down, but this tore me in two. The thought of no more me and you. You gave me shoes, Nikes like new for me for school.
So I will say this, like, Eminem, whatever well of emotion that he taps into when he talks about his daughter, I find affecting, even if it's tough to listen to or even like arrhythmic. The actual sort of pure emotion has been and remains affecting. And I think you hear that on these last songs. You know, Haley, we don't know what Haley's up to. I'm pretty sure she was a valedictorian of her high school. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, she was in the news for something like being really super smart.
Yeah. So shouts to Haley Jade, who doing big things, being Eminem's child, obviously.
Having cheese on the burgers, always.
Yes. So much cheese.
The Gouda but, and the bacon.
Yes, but hearing Eminem rap about her has always been among the better parts of Eminem's catalog and Eminem's approach to me. And I think that is true on this record as well. It's kind of hard to argue with these last songs, even if I don't love the songs, sort of qua song.
Well, yeah, like I immediately like died laughing at the Bette Midler sample, but you know, I started to get into the record and I was like, oh, wow, this guy's really, he cares. And it's really easy to forget, you know, amid like all this sort of foolery and you know, all the fantastical stories and the terrible like lyrics and stuff. This is a dude who like has a serious story. You know, he grew up, you know, not having money, and he had a weird family situation, and he got deeply into drugs and almost destroyed his life as a family man. And that's something that I think that he should do a lot more talking about. So, like, I don't love the songs. Like, I respect the fact that there is a human side to him and that he's expressing it there and how that sort of pans out on the record.
Do you feel like you would want to hear an entire album's worth of that from him?
I could not possibly stomach it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, like that, I mean, that's a good question. Like, what would a good Eminem album look like?
Well, this is, I think, something we both kind of talked about towards the end of our reviews. Like, I think a good Eminem album would either be one of two things. I think it would be like an incredibly pared down emotional record, or it would be a genre exercise in 1986 to 1988
really,
style rapping.
Really, what you should have done is what Jay-Z did, which is to hop in the studio, get some crazy chops, and just go bar for bar and talk about your story.
Like, yes, but see, this is it's interesting comparing 444 to Revival, because Jay did a thing that I don't think Eminem is really capable of, because Eminem has somehow made self-excavation feel narcissistic. And I think he's done that throughout his career. And I think Jay, when he's been at his emotional best, has always managed to kind of present as vulnerable, which is not something that happened in like 98, 99, 2000, 2001, but in 96 and again in 2017, it's something that it's a part of his toolkit that he has access to. Eminem, I think, except when he's rapping about his daughter, isn't able to do that. He doesn't do it about himself. He doesn't do it about his mom. He doesn't do it about Kim. I would like to see.
I mean,
more
they get
of
like
that.
A record every other album, one of the two, the mom and the
right. But know, it's usually it's a clap. It's not like a, you know,
which is weird because on the last one, you know, he gave the mom like a serious sort of like, I'm sorry for killing you.
And he did that about Kim on this record. He did a, you know, there's a Kim thing on this record that's basically that,
which is somehow messier than the ones where he killed her. Like,
no, I 100% agree. Before I go, I want to just take a second to pay tribute to someone who passed away today, the day that we're recording, and that's Reggie Osei, a.k.a. Combat Jack. Reggie was someone who was deeply knowledgeable about hip-hop and incredibly passionate and incredibly warm. I was lucky enough to be interviewed on the Combat Jack show, and it was definitely a career highlight for me. It was a very good-natured grilling, and I really enjoyed kind of being in that room and talking about music journalism with someone who, it was clear, cared about it as much as I did. Reggie was a gifted podcaster, the Combat Jack show, the archives are a wealth of gems that will last for generations. He did a show called Mogul, where he investigated the story of Chris Lighty. I highly recommend that you go back and spend some time over the holidays listening to his work. Reggie Osei died, and we want to send our best to his family and to his loved ones. I feel like we've played kind of all the good songs off the Eminem record, so let's close out with one that I think is maybe, if there is a sleeper hit on this record, I think it's probably the one with your boy Ed Sheeran. And it's River. Like the rain, so
let the river run. He's coming home with his neck scratched to catch flack. Sweat jackets and dress slacks mismatched on his breast jack. He's a sex addict and she just wants to exact the binge and get back. It's a chess match. She's on his.
That's this week's podcast. This will be the last podcast of 2017. I want to thank Craig Jenkins for being with us today and chopping it up about Slim Shady. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You can email us. I don't know. Do people still have feelings about Eminem? Is that a thing? Maybe you should email us at podcast@nytimes.com and tell me if you have feelings or if you refuse to have feelings about Eminem. You can subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio content, and that is Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, TuneIn, etc., etc. Just get at us and smash that MF and subscribe. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We're out. Have a great end of the year and holiday season. See you in 2018. All it's gonna cause is pain. The truth in my life. Now we're falling like the rain. So let the river run. One night stand turned into nightstand. It was calm, some lights cram. Now we hung tight and he found out. Now she feels deserted and used because he left. So what he did at first to her too.